I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
It's good to be with you once again.
Do you realise this is our 40th episode together? And we seem to have covered a fair range of topics so far. Bearing that in mind, what would you consider to be the key determinant for every successful commercial property investor?
Well, Ken, that's pretty easy, really. The answer is that you have to have access to everything there is to know. That's about the property that you're thinking of buying, but even before that, the market that you're thinking of looking in, the geography, every aspect that you can possibly need, the economy, all those sort of things. But the caveat is that you can't and shouldn't have to learn everything by yourself. Now, I've spoken before, and I don't want to labour it, but this is where your consulting team comes in. I mean, initially, you appoint them to help you solve problems in specific areas, specific disciplines, whether it's legal, accounting, tax, building construction, or whatever. But if you build up a close relationship with them, quite often they will bring you deals. They will anticipate things before you even have to ask them to resolve that particular problem. They are part of your close-knit team, your confidants, and sure, I play a significant role and perhaps help coordinate some of the consultants, but you need to look upon them as your friend. Yes, they will cost you money, but I can promise you it's very cheap insurance. And overall, you will find that you come out with a net positive outcome by using them, because they will save you far more than it will cost you in paying them fees. And also, what it means is that you can delve into the knowledge bank that they have in so many areas. And if they don't know the answer, they'll probably be able to refer you to someone who does of equal caliber, so that you just add another member to your team. You don't have to use them all the time. You only pay them when you use them. But it's having the ability to make a phone call and identify it. I mean, for example, the other day, one of my Queensland-based clients rang me. We're talking about one particular property that he'd bought, and he asked me a question about another one where he'd had to put a roof on it and how would be the best way to tackle that from a tax point of view. Well, immediately, I was able to give him the phone number of the tax expert at HWL Ebsworth, who can provide him with the very latest position on how to best handle that to make it get the best either deduction or depreciation benefits and to structure the invoice appropriately. Now, that's what we're talking about, is the ability to tap into the knowledge base that each of these consultants have in their own field of expertise, but also being able to identify and lead you or guide you towards solving other particular issues or problems you may have.
In essence, what you're encouraging listeners to do is shorten their learning curve.
Precisely. That's absolutely correct. That will, as I said, provide you with a much shorter learning curve, because you are then no longer responsible for having to have it all in your own head. As I say to people, your head, you shouldn't use your brain as a filing cabinet. You use it as a thinking machine. And I've got a very simple, I mean, I'm not a quick reader, but I've developed the best speed reading technique that I know. I can devour book after book, magazine after magazine, get through them quickly. I can almost read it at an amazing speed of, you know, a couple of thousand words a minute, because the technique is simple. It's scan, tear, file, and read when you need. Now, instead of tearing, now you either photocopy or just bookmark as far as things because most of it's online. But most people read the article in full to decide whether or not they want to keep it. Then they think they do. They don't need it immediately, so they file it away, either in hard copy or soft copy. And then when the time comes for them that they need it, they've got to reread the whole article again. Why waste the time the first time? You don't need the information there and then. You just need to quickly scan and skim through it to work out, yes, it's something I could need, and therefore file it away. In the same way with your consultants, if they could possibly help you, you get them on board. You don't know when you're going to need them, but you have the rapport built up and you keep in touch with them. It's only a 30-second phone call every now and then if you haven't had to deal with them, just to let them know you still love them. And therefore, you have access to all the information if and when you need it. But I remember, on the other thing is, it also stops you procrastinating, because so many people put off doing deals and looking for properties because they don't have that information or access to it immediately because they haven't done the initial legwork to set it up. But once you've got your consulting team, you need to know something. You pick up the phone and ring the solicitor or the accountant or whoever it might be. And it quite often, when the relationship is there, it is only a 30-second, 1 minute, at the worst, 2 minute conversation to get the comfort of knowing that you can proceed along the path that you want to. But I started to say, I remember back in the, I suppose it was the 80s, the early mid 80s, and there was a book, I can't remember the name of it, but it was written by Tom Peters, a management guru. And he had a very simple philosophy, and that was ready, fire, aim. In other words, don't try and nail everything down so that you feel you've got everything under control before you act. Just move on and take action, and then you make adjustments along the way. You can always pause and check the directions along the way. And it all comes down to taking action, but knowing when the flags arise, where to go for the answer. But heading off also presumes that you have a detailed set of goals and know exactly where you're heading. You don't have to know the details of how to get there and all that, but you have to have the idea of where you're going. Now, if you don't, what I'll do, Ken, is I'll put a link for you. I'll give you a link. You step in under the podcast and the resources of a video I put together for some of my clients on effective goal setting. And that shows you how to map out and the importance of having effective goals going forward. Because there are going to be times in your investment where things don't go right. And you need to have your goals in place and the techniques that I'll show you to tide you over those times so that you don't feel despondent or whatever. I mean, it's never always going to go perfectly right. Nothing ever does, whether it's property investment or running a business or whatever. But having a method and a technique to overcome those periods is vital.
So, after you've made a start, should it then be basically plain sailing from there?
I assume when you say after you've made a start, you mean having bought your first property or maybe two properties, that everything should be plain sailing from there. The issue I have is that if having done that you start to feel too comfortable, I can tell you you're not pushing yourself or using your talents to the fullest. And this is where people start to get lax, miss opportunities. They tend to not only overlook the opportunities, but actually stop anticipating some of the issues that are not going to work in their favour. Sometimes you can, and it gets to a second sense or whatever, sixth sense. I'll say to a client, I think you should do so-and-so. And he said, why would I do it? I said, look, I don't know. I just, after 40 years, I just think you should do this. Sure enough, 2 weeks later, something happens, and hopefully he took the advice. Some cases he didn't. He said, oh, look, I wish I'd listened to you. I can't tell you why I do that, but it's being tuned in and always pushing the boundaries, as it were, not taking unnecessary risks, but pushing the boundaries so that you always having to test yourself, as it were, and just push the boundaries so that you keep your instincts sharp. Now, that's another reason for having your consulting team, because they you can look upon as your safety net. And that should enable you to tackle things which are slightly outside your comfort zone, because you know you've got these people that you can fall back on. And if things don't go perfectly as you had in mind, they can help dig you out of a ditch, as it were. But it's probably better to consult them before you head off in that direction, because they might say, well, that's fine, but if you were to do so-and-so instead of such-and-such, I think you'll find that it'll work better. And, you know, they're just simple suggestions. In and of themselves, they're not major as far as a change or adding any cost to the deal. But 5 years down the track, having not made that minor change could be quite significant. You know, we talked a little while ago about getting the right investment vehicle. If you don't, could be very expensive, because you might want to make change to equity, and the cost of unwinding what you've done becomes almost prohibitive. Arranging finance, your method of structuring the deal, you know, going after the last 0.2 percentage points in the interest rate might cost you dearly in the terms of the deal and the way it's actually structured in 5 years' time. It's a problem. So it's best to take that advice. And as I said, that provides you with the safety net and allows you to overcome a lot of these issues that people find themselves in purely from not seeking or taking advice at the outset.
Could you perhaps give us a couple of examples of stepping outside your comfort zone?
A couple of examples. Well, I've always told you, when you start out, is to not take on the world at large, and you pick a single niche and master that as far as understanding the type of property. It might be the location where it is, but let's say you do offices as your niche. So you research the offices, the demand for office space, the vacancy level, the rate per square meter they're selling for, the cap rates and so forth. You do the analysis so that you understand it fully. You might have made one or two purchases of offices. So now you think, well, I'd like to diversify a bit. So you think, well, let's look at industrial. So again, you go out and research and go through the process again. And while the process might be the same, the method of seeking the answers might be quite different. So you're being pushed outside your comfort zone. You're very comfortable with the office sector, but now you're going into the industrial sector, you need to have more input. You need to get a better feel. What type of tenants occupy what type of properties? With offices, an office is an office, but with industrial property, there's slightly different designs for warehousing, or if someone's running a small manufacturing business, again, there are certain requirements. So it's a matter of again, just pushing the boundaries a bit, so you then are able to feel more confident when you either have to look at another new area or a problem arises in one of the areas you're already reasonably comfortable with. Because you have been able to easily master each new exercise, that just adds to your confidence base. And there's an old saying, live wherever you wish, but invest where it makes sense. And a lot of people seem to feel that they have to invest or should invest only close to where they live. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, 80% of my clients actually from interstate. They want to purchase in Melbourne, but it works out, I think, 30% from Western Australia, 30% from Brisbane, 20% from Sydney, and then I've got probably 5% are based in Kuala Lumpur, New Zealand, Hong Kong, but they're all wanting to invest in Melbourne. So they have themselves decided that is the best place to invest. And even though they live in these other areas, now that has the other advantage. I know it might seem quite small, but it means that if you then say, well, look, let's go for a holiday to Melbourne, there is a tax deductibility component, because you can always argue you're coming to Melbourne to, even though you might be going to watch the AFL Grand Final or the Melbourne Cup or the Grand Prix, that you're coming to see or inspect your property. It might be only an annual inspection, but so long as you've got a competent managing agent, and even though I mightn't be involved with the properties that I help my clients buy on a day-to-day basis, I still have an ongoing watching brief and, as needed, involvement with the managing agent for the life of their ownership. So if the managing agent has a particular problem, he'll probably ring me first, and then we arrive at a joint recommendation, and then he will contact the interstate client of mine so that he can say, or she can say, look, Chris and I have discussed it. This is what we recommend. Are you happy to proceed on that basis? Because I always object, and when I used to manage property, I never, as most agents do, is they say, oh, here's the problem, what do you want to do? You should make decisions based on recommendations. And so I always like to provide my clients with, if there's an issue, you could do this, you could do that, this is what I would recommend. So then you make a decision based on reasoned argument.
You said your consulting team allows you to multiply your time through being able to delegate. However, are there certain aspects you need to personally control?
Yes, there are probably three. First one would be shortlisting your potential properties, and that's why I've created the high return filter, which is a free app. And again, Ken, I'll give you a link underneath this if people haven't already got it. And that helps you very quickly work out which ones should be considered for further investigation. Then for my mentor group and the clients that I act for, it's creating the projected cash flows using the final judgment software, which takes the 18 key components and puts them into a spreadsheet automatically, distills it down to two pages, one assumptions and two the projected cash flow on an after-tax basis. So that's important that you control those. And also marketing. You see, over the last 10 years, things have changed. And unfortunately, most real estate agents haven't grasped those changes yet. And if they haven't grasped them, they can't really deliver to you the best outcome as far as the marketing of your property is concerned. And what you need to understand is the impact that the 40-year cycles for Western society are having on not only commercial property, but just your life in general. And so again, if you like, I'll put up a link where you can get a quick, because we don't have the time now, a quick insight into how things have changed in marketing over the last 10 years. And you can also download a white paper I prepared of a summary of a book called Pendulum, which is a fascinating book. And there's a little video clip in there as well, which I think you'll find quite interesting. So I'll give you a link to put that up under the site. So in summary, shortlisting your properties, the projected cash flow and the end marketing are ones that you really need to have a close involvement with.
So in summing up, what would you say?
Okay, in summary, don't confuse activity with results. You need to have a clear focus upon what you want to achieve, and then decide and do rather than dream and dabble. You also need to develop your own key performance indicators. For example, there are a couple that come to mind. You need to keep a record of how many purchase proposals did you submit last month. And I'm assuming you're in the mood for buying a property, or you do that on a continuous basis. And probably the next most important one is, what is your offer acceptance ratio? Now, to start with, it may be around 10 to 1. In other words, you make 10 offers and only one gets accepted. But right now for my clients, it's averaging about 2 to 1. So you've got to get it down so it becomes very efficient. And that's mainly through experience, choosing your shortlist well, and then it probably comes down to skillful negotiating. So I hope that helps.
Yes, that would seem to tie everything together rather well. Thank you. And will you be joining us next week?
I'm looking forward to it.